It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and on this show, we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep. Today, we have a guest. We have Jane Rigglesworth. She is a degree-qualified naturopath and medical herbalist. So we're going to learn all about how that affects sleep and things that we can do to improve our own sleep. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have you here. And I'd love to start off by just getting a little bit about your background and what got you interested in the field in the first place. And if you could define for us, what exactly is it when we say a naturopath and medical herbalist?
Sure. So I'll start with that. A naturopath is really a medical herbalist. A naturopath really is someone who uses natural medicine. So what I studied was a Bachelor of Natural Medicine. So it doesn't necessarily mean I will only use herbs in for clients. So I might use herbs, supplements, but we also look at lifestyle factors and diet as well. So we studied nutrition. So we got to look at the whole picture of everything. So I guess that's a little bit what makes us a little bit different than saying if you're going to the GP, I don't know if it's like you, but if you go to the GP here, you're only getting like 15 minutes at most with the GP. But if you come to a naturopath, you're going to get a full hour, sometimes an hour and a half, because that first initial consult, we're going through the entire history, medical history of that client, and also maybe their family history as well, their medical backgrounds. So looking at that, looking at their diet, looking at their habits, their lifestyle habits, what they're drinking, etc. I don't just mean alcohol, I mean coffees, everything. We're going to the whole picture. So that basically, I guess, is what a naturopath is. Looking at the whole thing, it's a holistic treatment. How I got into that myself was because my background is writing and editing. So I'm editing magazines. So I developed a bleeding stomach, unbeknown to me. And the hospital worked out that it was a slow bleed. So my body naturally adjusted to that slow bleed. So the iron was going down and down and down, but my body was adjusting to it because it was a very slow bleed. Anyway, a few months along the track, it got really bad. I was walking along a flat and I was puffing on a flat, and I thought, and a little bit dizzy, this is not right. So I went to the doctor, ended up in hospital because I virtually had no iron. My hemoglobin was so low that I had to have blood transfusions. And long story short, the hospital GP gave me the little red tablets, which are the iron ferrous tablets. They didn't really agree with me. They made me a little bit nauseous. So, and also it was under the hospital care for some time. So I was getting a monthly blood test to see how my blood levels were going. But they weren't coming up. They would keep dropping, going up a little bit, dropping, going up a little bit. So I decided that I would Google and see if I could find some kind of natural solution that would help me build my iron up. So what I found, I Googled with this particular herb. They call it a super herb. It's so high in vitamins and minerals and iron and vitamin C, because you need vitamin C for the iron to absorb. And that herb was parsley. So what I did, I started to just eat raw parsley because I like to garden, so I grew my own parsley. So I started to eat that as much as I could, sprinkled some on my dinners, raw, on my dinners and in my sandwiches or what have you. And at the same time, I was having chamomile tea because for me, chamomile tea is a really lovely, it just calms me down. I'm still a little bit stressed, so it calms me down really lovely. So what I noticed, because I was still getting those blood tests monthly, was that my iron levels were coming up and up and up very slowly, wow. But they were coming up and up and up. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I wasn't taking the iron tablets either by that, at that stage. So that, to me, was an incredible eye-opener. And in hindsight, I didn't know at the time, but chamomile is actually an amazing anti-inflammatory as well. So because of the bleed that was going on my stomach, it would have been so much inflammation going on there. So I wouldn't have been able to absorb iron very well or any other minerals and nutrients as well. So the chamomile was really sitting in my stomach and enabling me to absorb that iron. So that is actually what got me into naturopathy, really. That's where I studied that formulae. And also for sleep. I was an insomniac myself for 10 years. So now I sleep amazingly well. And that shift came when I decided to learn, study the science behind sleep, because I want to know why. I took everything under the sun, as many people do. You take all sorts of supplements that are out there over the counter. Nothing was working whatsoever. But when I studied the actual science behind it, I realized what I was doing by mistake, and I started to sleep well. And that is how I got into sleep science. I now specialize in sleep for people, and I love it. I really love it. Helping people to get a good night's sleep.
Wow, that's a really interesting story, and I'm certainly interested to hear how you went about all of this so that you've improved not only your own sleep but others. But I do want to point out that, you know, something you're talking about is something that is very important to me, and that is, you know, from my end, I do clinical work for people with sleep, with insomnia, and so on and so forth. And, you know, one of the things that I learned early on, similar to what you're saying, is that a person is a whole person. It's a whole body. You can't treat one piece and everything else is not working right and expect that that one piece is going to do well. And exactly. So it is so important to me to talk with clients not only about, okay, yes, you're having the sleeping problem. Maybe you've got insomnia. Let's talk about when that started and all about it. But let's also talk about, what are you eating? You know, what type of exercise are you getting? What other things are going on in your life? Maybe you've got some big stressors. Maybe you've got other, you know, co-occurring disorders. Maybe you've got something else that's impacting this. So there's so many people who, at least here in the U.S., they tend to go to their general practitioner or they go to a sleep doctor first, which is great. But those people are trained many times to prescribe medications. And then years later, someone will come to me and they'll say, I really want to get off of the medicine and I'm looking for a different approach. So, you know, the medications can do certain things, but they're not going to cure the underlying sleep problem typically. And people don't think about other alternatives. So I'm glad to be having this conversation because I think it is important to look at the big picture for everybody.
Absolutely. And with sleeping tablets, you know, they really should only be used short-term, so short-term relief. And there is a place for that, absolutely. I'm not a fan of them long-term at all because they come with significant downsides. Like, they change your sleep architecture, actually, by... And you'll know this by reducing your deep sleep and REM sleep as well. And those are the most restorative sleep stages. So you're going to be waking up groggy in the morning because you're not getting that really deep sleep, restorative sleep. And you, after time, you'll become dependent on it and your body gets used to it, of the drug over time. So if you're trying to come off it, you can get what's called rebound insomnia. And you've probably seen that a lot yourself in clinic. If they're using it long-term, the body gets used to it. And if they're going to come off that, you get that rebound insomnia and it's often actually worse than what it was to start with. And also long-term use has been linked to things like memory issues, cognitive decline, increased risk of dementia, higher rates of falls and accidents, particularly in the older adults. Mm-hmm. They do not fix that root cause. They really only mask it. So that's why I'm not a particular fan of these sleeping tablets. There is a place for them, definitely, but I'm not a huge fan of those.
Right, right. No, I you know, and everything that you're saying is pretty much what the patients say to me when they come, is they recognize those issues, and that's why they want to get off of them, and they want to find a more natural way to go to sleep. Now, for me, totally. I use cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, but that's my approach, but it's not the only approach. So I would like to know more about your own story. So you said you had insomnia, and then you started to do the research and found ways to improve that for yourself. So first, let's start with this just for the audience. So when we talk about insomnia, we typically talk about someone who either has problems falling asleep, staying asleep, or waking too early, or a combination, you know, of the above. And it's important to know which one it is, because there can be different reasons or causes for, you know, depending on their particular situation. So what type of insomnia did you have, and what did you learn to be able to fix your own situation?
So I had both, actually. So I couldn't get to sleep, so that's sleep onset insomnia, and I couldn't stay asleep, which they call sleep maintenance insomnia. So So what I did was, obviously I did have sleep, otherwise I wouldn't have survived. You know, you can't go without sleep, otherwise you'll die, basically. But what I did first was the sleep hygiene. And first and foremost, you should start with sleep hygiene. Then that's part of your behavioral sleep as well, I understand. So sleep hygiene was a big thing for me. I would, as I mentioned, I was an editor in those days, and very, very stressful, very long hours. Like, we would have a deadline every fortnight, and we would be, myself and my designer would be up at 3 or 4 a.m. in the morning finishing that deadline, then going to bed and coming back to work. So the whole lifestyle was not good for me, and when I was on that deadline, I'd be just, my body would crave sugars. So I'd just be eating sugars. So all of this is actually not good for sleep, right? So you need to have a regular routine going on. And that means your body will adjust to that routine. So you go to bed. What I mean by that is you go to bed, say, let's say 10 p.m. at night, go to bed each time as much as you can. You're going to have one or two nights not being able to do that, but going to bed at, say you go to bed at 10 p.m. each night, your body adjusts to that, and it knows, okay, 10 p.m. is coming up, melatonin is coming down because of the night is upon us, melatonin is being released, so your body's adjusting to that and getting ready for you to go to sleep. But I was having hours all over the place. I was working at home till 10 p.m. on my computer with the bright lights, going to bed and wondering why I couldn't sleep. So those bright lights are really important to dim those at night. So right. We don't want to have that blue light. That blue light, we have the receptor in the eyes, and probably most people know this anyway. You know, we often look at our phones just before we go to sleep, checking our emails, checking our social media, and that's a really bad thing, because that is going to inhibit that melatonin release and delay your sleep. So I was doing all of that. That was not so good. Also, while I'm working late, you're going to have your heaters on if it's in the middle of winter, but you need to start cooling down slightly. Your body actually does that when melatonin is released at night when it's dark outside. But it's not going to do that, of course, if you've got these bright lights in your eyes. But when melatonin comes out, that's when your body temperature goes down slightly to prepare you for sleep, because we do need that cooling down to start to go off to sleep. So if you've got it blazing hot in in your room, and that really is a contributor to disrupted sleep as well. If you're doing things like exercise late at night, that's not a good thing either, because your body heat is elevated, you're stimulated, and you're often wired, and you won't be able to sleep. Most people won't be able to sleep after that either. So it's just looking at those basic sleep hygiene things as well. It's also looking at food and nutrition as well. So I now make sure I get a lot of tryptophan in my diet. So tryptophan is an amino acid, and that's found in the proteins that we eat. And it is a precursor to serotonin, which is a precursor to melatonin. Melatonin is what we call our sleep hormone. So if we're not getting enough tryptophan in our diet, then we're probably not going to have, we might have some disrupted sleep there because it's not converting to that serotonin to melatonin, et cetera.
Right. But, let me stop you right there real quick because I've got to take a commercial break, but we're going to come right back and pick up on that thought because this is a whole interesting conversation about diet. So we will be right back on Sleep Science Today. If you're having trouble sleeping and you need support, don't go it alone. Join us at our free online support group at sleepsupportgroup.com. Just put in your email address, sign up for the list, and you will be notified of all of our upcoming meetings. It's free, so why not try it out? Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Jane Rigglesworth, and we were just about to get deep into diet and its impact on sleep. So, Jane, please take it away.
Sure. So, to promote a good night's sleep, you really need to pad your diet with vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. And I was talking about tryptophan, where the tryptophan converts to serotonin, which is our kind of happy hormone, which then converts to melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. And if we don't get enough tryptophan in our diet, then we may have disrupted sleep at night. And this can be, there's studies done that our biggest time in the morning, I'm always a breakfast person. I know a lot of people want to skip breakfast, but I'm definitely a breakfast person. And I feel that that should be the time when you have a lot of protein at that breakfast. And that actually, there's studies done that the protein that you get at your breakfast supports sleep later on at night. So I'm really big on breakfast and high protein breakfast. So the tryptophan you get, you must make sure you get that at breakfast and throughout the day as well, and morning, lunch, and dinner as well. But the thing here is that, particularly in the evening, a lot of people like to cut back on their carbs, and I understand why. But the thing with tryptophan is you actually need some carbs to help that tryptophan cross the blood-brain barrier. Because what happens was carbs release insulin, right? And which lowers the amino acids in the blood, except for tryptophan. So that means if you're not having the carbs, the tryptophan will compete with all those other amino acids, and it doesn't usually win for crossing that blood-brain barrier, if that makes sense. So with a little bit of carbs, and I'm not talking sugar carbs, I'm talking good quality carbs, slow carbs, then that insulin is raised, binds to that tryptophan, and the tryptophan crosses the blood-brain barrier. So you must make sure that you have a little bit of carbs at night. I've seen that a lot with clients that are on something like a keto diet or a very low carb diet. They do have problems sleeping at night. So I try and ask them to compromise and just have a little bit of good quality carbs in their diet so they can actually get a better night's sleep there. So yeah, really important, your nutrition.
So can you give us an example of some of the types of foods that someone might have for breakfast or throughout the day that qualify for the proper amount of tryptophan and all the things that you were just describing?
Sure. So I'm really big. For myself, I like oats. So I will have oats for breakfast, a porridge or something like that. Or you can have, you know, a birch and muesli, which is an overnight oats. Do you have birch and muesli there? No. It's basically just oats, and you do it at nighttime. It's oats, and you will soak it in milk or juice or something. I don't use juice, but milk, or it could be a nut milk or something like that. And you could put nuts in there, a few like berries or something, put that in a fridge overnight, and then you have it in the morning. So it's cold. It's like a raw and cold. It's I love it. It's delicious, and it's easy to do, and you just grab it in the morning and it's ready to go. So, and I also use a lot of pumpkin seeds and sunflower seeds because they're very high in tryptophan, especially pumpkin seeds. Hemp seeds as well, really great. So I always sprinkle those on my breakfast. If you're a savory type of person, that's fine. Eggs obviously is a way to go there. And if you like your bacon, go for bacon, you know, that kind of thing for breakfast. Otherwise, you might want to look at, if you don't like oats, you could look at something like amaranth, puffed amaranth, or those kind of things, you know, millet to make some kind of porridge there. So anything that's high in protein, which those particular foods are. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. So, you know, we were talking about the fact that you had insomnia, you had looked at ways to address it, you learned about the tryptophan, you learned about the sleep hygiene. Were there any other things that you did for yourself?
Yeah, so I started off with magnesium, and magnesium and B vitamins. So a lot of people will say, I've taken magnesium, it doesn't work, and it might not, but actually probably what's going on is something else. They need to address something else before, because, you know, you can take as much of something as you like that you think is going to help you sleep, but if you don't address the actual problem first, maybe they've got hormone issues. Maybe it's their blood sugars, it's high or low, it's fluctuating all the time. So if you don't actually fix those first, nothing really is going to help. But I didn't have any of that kind of issue. So I knew that I was looking at gadgets, basically. I had the blue screen there. Probably my diet wasn't the best, but so I made sure I had the breakfast in the morning. And I can tell if I don't have breakfast, or especially oats, then my sleep is not as good as what it could be. But magnesium was the next thing I started to take. So I take magnesium at night, and glycinate is one of the best magnesiums to have if you are not sleeping well. Magnesium threonate is also quite good, but because that crosses the blood-brain barrier very easily, and it's very good for the brain. But you don't want to have that in very high doses, because that can have the opposite effect then. So just be wary of that. But glycinate is a very good one to have. Mm-hmm. But magnesium, so like back in the 1900s, right, the average intake of magnesium was about 475 to 500 milligrams per day. Today, from our food, it's something like 175 to 225 daily. So, and the recommended daily allowance is about 320 milligrams for women and 420 for men. So, in fact, researchers actually believe that that figure is actually inadequate. So, many, many people are not getting enough magnesium in their diet. I'm all for food supplying the vitamins and minerals. Excuse me. But if that's not going to happen, then supplements are obviously the next choice. So I have given magnesium to people. So I mentioned B vitamins. I think I mentioned B vitamins. Yes. That's something I also take in the morning, and I take magnesium at night about an hour before I go to bed. So, excuse me. So the B vitamins in the morning, so a lot of us are depleted in the B vitamins as well. So both B and magnesium are depleted very easily in our bodies. So if we're stressed, those are the two that are depleted very, very easily. And most people that I see come in because of a stress issue, and that's one of the biggest issues why people can't sleep. Mm-hmm. So B vitamins are very good to be taking in the morning to get your B vitamins up, and magnesium at night. So both of these, as I said, are depleted very, very quickly. You deplete particularly magnesium when you're exercising. So if you're big on exercise, then your magnesium is depleted quite quickly. So you want – I've had clients that literally I've just given them B vitamins in the morning, and I mean B complex that you can easily get from a chemist or pharmacy – B complex and in the morning, and a magnesium at night, and they sleep much, much better. And that's all they've taken. So that just tells you that, you know, we really need to look at our nutrients that we're getting on a daily basis. Right. And if we think we're not getting enough nutrients, then maybe we need to take some supplements.
So just out of curiosity then, with the B vitamins and magnesium and the things you were talking about, are there any natural foods or anything that would give us what we need, or is it easiest and best to use a supplement?
I think, yes, there are, absolutely. But I think at that stage where if you're not sleeping, you're very low in these particular vitamins and minerals. So that's when it's a good time to take some supplements initially anyway. Because people want a magic pill when they come in to see me. They want a magic pill. So that's just the nature of how we are these days. But if you want to just do with food, and some people do, there are some things that are high in magnesium. So there's spinach actually is high in magnesium, quinoa, almonds, cashews and peanuts are. You've got dark chocolate as well. I don't recommend having a lot of chocolate, but especially before bed. I mean, you can have chocolate during the day. I'm not strict on those kind of things, but just before bed is not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Black beans are really high in magnesium as well. You've got avocado as well. So those kind of things. a really good to be you know, adding to your diet as well.
Right.
As regards to bees, definitely meat. So with someone who is vegetarian or vegan, I will always look at their B vitamins. If we get a test done or ask the GP to get a test done, then B vitamins are often low for vegans and vegetarians, unless they're supplementing. So meat, poultry, fish, eggs, dairy products are high in B vitamins, leafy greens as well, vegetables, beans. And we also have fortified cereals here that have bees in them, but I'm not big on cereals because they're very high in sugar. It's not
definitely. Yeah. Sugar is always like the number one or number two ingredient whenever you look in the store here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Wow. Well, I was going to say iron as well. Iron is actually kind of flies under the radar when it comes to sleep problems, but I found it consistently pops up with many of my clients. And if you remember back, because of my bleeding stomach, I had no iron and I was really bad sleeping then as well, but there was a whole lot of other things going on. But iron deficiency, people probably think of it in terms of energy or fatigue, but it plays a huge role in the chemistry of sleep. So iron, for example, it's essential for making certain brain chemicals, especially dopamine and serotonin. And both of these are directly involved in how we fall asleep and stay asleep and how rested we feel when we sleep. And one of the key enzymes that turns tryptophan into serotonin is tryptophan hydroxylase, and it literally cannot function without iron. So, so we need to make sure with our iron levels. So that's another thing that I'll get tested, my clients tested for, B vitamins and iron as well, most definitely. And it's also, if you're low in iron, that can contribute to restless leg syndrome. So definitely if someone comes with that, that's when you've got that horrible, crawling, twitchy feeling in your legs, which tends to get worse at night. So if someone's got that, definitely I will be looking at iron for that. Lots of studies done on that, and they're often low in iron there.
Right.
Yes.
Well, this is a great spot for us to take our next commercial break. So let me do that. And when we come back, I want to hear about some actual stories of things that you've worked with other clients, some unusual things, and let's go beyond just the insomnia now. So we'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Jane Rigglesworth, and we're talking about naturopath and medical herbalist approaches to sleep. So we've talked about insomnia some, and you shared your story. But let's hear about what are some of the most common sleep issues that you see when people come to you, and tell us about some of the approaches that you use to help them with that.
Yeah, so stress is probably one of the biggest ones there. And As I said, I'll always start with the foundational supplements, which is B vitamins and the magnesium as well. But also looking at the others that might be beneficial for that person. And everyone's different as well of what I might prescribe to them, depending on what's going on in their life. And often there's stress, but there might be a comorbidity as well. So I might have some other disease or disorder or something else that's going on. So it's always different for different people. But I definitely like things like some of the common herbs like lemon balm and passion flower, ashwagandha. That's an amazing adaptogen that helps your body kind of adjust to stress. But it also, with ashwagandha, it can regulate cortisol levels. So often if you can't sleep, you're stressed, your cortisol is high, right? At the end of the night, it should be going down. That's the natural body rhythms. It should be actually going down. But for those people who are stressed, it actually can be rising up. So the higher your cortisol levels, the lower your melatonin levels. So you really need to look at that. So ashwagandha is a really good one to help lower cortisol levels. Another one is L-theanine. Very good for that. And holy basil is another great one. All those are really great for lowering cortisol levels. So if someone is like jittery at night, wide awake, going to sleep, just racing thoughts and all those kind of things, that's the kind of thing I'd be looking at there. Mm-hmm. If someone just needs a little bit of calming, maybe looking at lemon balm, passion flower, that kind of thing. And while valerian root is well known for sleep, right? It's not something that I prescribe. It's not something that I use. And I'll tell you why. There are actually a small number of people or group of people that cannot take valerian. It has the opposite effect on them. So, and I'm one of those people. So when I took, back in the day when I was trying all sorts of things, trying to get my insomnia under control, I took valerian and it felt to me like I'd just taken 10 cups of coffee. I was so wired. Wow. And just, bleh. And there are a lot of people that do have that. So there's not really an understanding why that happens, but there is just a small subset of people that does happen to. So, and the more I give quite a few talks to the local community, and I do a lot of corporate wellness as well. I do talks, and a lot of people have said to me the same thing, that they'd have valerian and it has the opposite effect for them. So I don't use valerian for people. Just wow. To be on the safe side. There are plenty of other herbs that can be used in place of that. So I don't like to use valerian. So even though it's still, no, there are studies out there that it is good for sleep and that. But I just have anecdotal evidence and I don't. There are studies too that it does have, you know, opposite people, but probably more studies that it's helpful for people. But my experience is the opposite. I just don't like to mm-hmm. use that. So so stress, definitely one of the biggest, probably if not the biggest, excuse me, issue. Next is nocturnal hypoglycemia. So that's, sorry, I've got this real quick voice. Sorry. So during the night, especially while we're asleep, our body relies on our liver to keep blood sugar stable. And it does this in two ways. So by breaking down stored glycogen into glucose and by making new glucose as well during the night. So those are two things that happen during the night to make sure that our blood sugar levels are level while we're sleeping. We're fasting for 8 hours, hopefully, overnight. But if our liver glycogen stores are low for any reason, the body won't be able to make enough glucose fast enough, and our blood sugar can start to dip. And this is likely to happen in REM sleep, funnily enough. That's the stage where our brain is active. It's metabolically active, very quiet, more so. It's equal or slightly more so than when we're awake. So what's happening is because it's metabolically active, it's demanding more glucose. So, and if the liver can't keep up with that, your blood sugar drops, and that's when your body's going to sound the alarm. So it's going to release adrenaline, mostly adrenaline, and cortisol as well. And that's what is going to wake you up. You're going to wake up from that. Wow. And some people don't have any major symptoms from that. They'll just keep waking up. That could be a reason. And that could be a reason for your 3 a.m. wake up, which a lot of people do experience. Right. Some people don't have that symptom, but if you do get symptoms and you're probably really low, then you might feel a little bit, when you're waking up, you're feeling a little bit anxious. You might be sweating. You might be hungry. That's a sure sign. Or your heart's pounding, that kind of thing. So you're trembling a little bit. That's a sure sign that your blood sugars are low. So that's the body's counter-regulatory response to your blood sugar level dipping. So it's releasing those adrenaline and cortisol, trying to bring those glucose levels back up and waking you up at the same time. So that's a big one that I see. Actually,
yeah, but so that leads to the question, though. So what do you recommend that people do if they find that that's happening to them? What should they be doing to change?
So if they're finding that's happening, then a little snack just before bed is perfect. And this is what I do for many ladies in perimenopause or postmenopause. Have this because they are often insulin resistant. That's a time of major hormone disruption or fluctuations. So it's also going to disrupt their blood sugar levels. So if they just have, and this works very well for many, many ladies, and also it will be for other people, and how your glycogen levels in your liver get low, it can be from athletes, can be one, because glycogen is stored in your liver and your muscles. So if you're really, and you're an athlete, you're going to use up that glycogen. And if you haven't refueled to replace that, then you could have sleep issues at night. So that's one reason. So you've got to, it's about eating nutritionally well during the day, basically, mm-hmm. to get those, keep those glycogen levels up high. But what you can do, and a little test to determine if you're waking up because of stress or you're waking up because of hypoglycemia, low blood sugar levels, is actually if your wake-ups improve with a bedtime snack, and we're talking like slow carbs or protein and good healthy fats, then if that improves after that snack, then it's likely to be low blood sugar. If you have that snack and it doesn't improve, then it could well be stress or high cortisol levels as well from the stress. But if you're waking up as well with racing thoughts, that's likely stress as well. So that's how you can tell a difference between those kind of things. And that's where you're treating it differently. Mm-hmm. So there's no point if you're going to, if you're waking up with stress, probably a snack's not going to help you at all because it might be your low blood sugar level. So we're looking at little snacks. So you want to have a very high protein, a little bit of healthy fats in there, and a tiny bit of good carbs in there, complex carbs. So it could be something like you could just simply have a handful of almonds. Mm-hmm. Not too many. You want to have a massive snack because that's going to wake you up just from that. But it could be like some Greek yogurt with a few berries and nuts mixed in there. So fiber's good as well. Fiber actually moderates the blood glucose response. Mm-hmm. And the protein and healthy snacks slow digestion and create a stable energy release there, and it helps prevent that dips in the sugar overnight. So you could have a hard-boiled egg on two whole grain crackers, for example, or one of my favorites is apple slices with like a tablespoon of peanut or almond butter, something like that. That's probably one of my second second highest reasons people are waking up at night. So stress and then low blood sugar is there. And then, of course, you get all the things like inflammation going on with, say, arthritis or that kind of thing. So inflammation, again, is going to inhibit melatonin. So you need to address that inflammation. So you might then be looking at things like turmeric. Boswellia is a great herb, especially if you've got joint pain there. Magnesium again, CBD oil in some areas. We can't get that here in New Zealand, but that would be a good one for elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And also for the, I go back to the blood sugar swings, if you're having those fluctuations there. So very good for that is glycine is really good for that. So you can get a lot of formulas with magnesium and glycine. So that's a really good one to have before bed. So glycine actually helps stabilize blood glucose, and it also lowers the body, the core body temperature as well, which is better for sleep. Inositol is a really good one. It supports insulin sensitivity. Like I said, a lot of middle-aged ladies will have insulin resistance there. It also reduces nighttime cortisol if you're having it at night. Licorice root is really good for supporting glucose and cortisol as well. If you have high blood pressure, though, you want to look at what's called deglycerinated or standardized licorice, which is better for the blood pressure. And the snacks, always looking at good quality snacks, not sugar. Right. You don't want sugary snacks. It's just going to doubly make it
here in the U.S. Yeah. Snack is synonymous with sugar, unfortunately.
It's got to be a handmade, you got to make your own snack, not a
actual
package
food.
Exactly.
So I hate to have to cut us off, but we are out of time, and it's just that there's so much great information here, and I'm really, really glad that you were able to join us and share all this. I want to mention, too, that you actually have written a book, right?
Yes. Thank you.
And what is the name of the book?
Yeah, so it's called The Everyday Herbalist. So it's not specifically about sleep, but it does have sleep in there. And it's really just, I wrote it because there wasn't anything really around that was, I mean, there's a lot of herb books out there, definitely, but, I wanted it to be really accessible to everyone to look at herbs and how they work, why they work. Cause I mean, a lot of people will poo-poo herbs and I understand that. I literally only work with evidence-based what has been studied and evidence-based around herbs and supplements and that. So I'm just kind of making it accessible herbs to the public if they want to try that and know what works and what might not work. And so I've mentioned in there about the valerian and how that doesn't work for everybody, for example, and that kind of thing, just to make it accessible for people.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, I have to wrap us up here because we're running a little bit over time, but I want to thank you for joining us. For those of you who are listening, this is Sleep Science Today. I encourage you to go to our website, sleepsciencetoday.com, where you can sign up to join our newsletter, get notifications. We have a free sleep support group that you can join that's online from anywhere in the world. So we try to bring all the resources that are good to help you improve your sleep. Thank you for joining us on this episode, and we look forward to seeing you on future episodes of Sleep Science Today.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, Sleep Science Today and sleep better tonight.